There
So.
we go. Good afternoon. I am so excited. This is a woman I admire and adore and love. This is Dana. I just can't thank her enough for coming back on. She rearranged her schedule because she's amazing and we have so much in common. And she and I, before coming on, were talking about faith and all of the narcissistic crap that goes on every day. And it's just more people go through it than most people realize. So Dana, thank you again for being here. I'm determined to have you on more often.
Well, thank you, but you never even have to ask me twice. As we have always said, we are doing this because your daughter's life, and especially what you guys have been through most recently, which is a parent's nightmare, doesn't have to happen. And it's happened because of a narcissist. And people just don't get, they use this term narcissist as like, oh, I don't like that person or they're a jerk. No, you don't even know the half of what these people are capable of. And you are the most prime example. And what your daughter has endured most recently is the most prime example of a child suffering because somebody had a power trip. And it's disgusting and vile, and it should be criminal, especially when these people, as is often the case, and as you know too well, are in positions of authority
Yes.
that allow them to get away with what they do. So we are going to shed light on this for anybody that can relate to it. And anybody that, has that parent or that spouse or maybe an ex that, or maybe it's somebody they know that's with one of these people, you have to know what this looks like so that you can help people get out of these situations before it's too late, because it can literally be deadly.
Absolutely. We've had you in before, but please tell everybody a little bit about your story and how you are just a thriver. You're not even just a survivor, you're a thriver and who you are and what you stand for and what you do every day.
Well, that's very sweet of you. I mean, you have certainly endured your fair share as well. I was born to an unwed teenage mother who didn't want me, had her tubes tied immediately after I was born, married the king of all narcissists. He was not my biological father, but he didn't even try to be any kind of a father to me. Instead, he hated me more than my mother did. So I grew up not just having that emotional neglect, but there was physical abuse, verbal abuse that basically primed me, despite my tenacity, primed me for a first marriage, 25 years long of more abuse at the hands of another narcissist. And in my marriage, I suffered multiple abuses. There was always the physical threat and the intimidation and things being punched and thrown and all that. But there was also financial abuse, legal abuse, sexual abuse, every way this man could manipulate me, contain me, make me think I was nuts. But I got out. I finally woke up, realized that he was not going to change, despite my hope that everybody can change and everybody should want to be better. I even thought I could help him be better, but that wasn't the case. So I had to get out when my health took a turn for the worst, because of the constant stress I was under. So that is what my book, Gasping for Air, is based on. And that is how we met, is through podcasting and through the book and through our common, parental situation and our common former marriages, but we're both in better places now, aside from your daughter's obvious health struggles. But again, we're gonna speak loud and proud for kids like her and for women like us that need their voice heard.
Well, I was telling her again before we came on here is that I love her book and it is one of those that you can't put down. And a lot of books, you kind of get into it and then somewhat you're like, oh, it's dry and then I'm gonna finish it later and you don't. Not only is her book like grasping for air, you're grasping to keep reading it. You don't even want to put it down. I've read it more than once. I had it at the hospital. My husband brought it up to me in the hospital because Faith couldn't be stimulated for a good almost 2 weeks when they had her in that medical induced sedation, if you will. And I reread it and I was showing everybody, I was like, you have to read this. Like, it is so empowering to have her. And I said, I'm so honored to even call her a friend, yet alone an associate, because she has gone through it. And it is literally like looking in a window, watching all of this unravel. It is so realistic. Like, you really are there with you going through every step of your book. It is so amazingly well written.
Thank you very much, because I worked really hard on that. I wanted to really give it a different twist because there's a lot of books about narcissistic abuse. Not many people tell their stories, but if I was going to tell it, I wanted to just, I had to tell it from the very real perspective. It was raw, and I went into the emotional depths of it. Even,
100%.
I mean, there was stuff that even I'm ashamed that I said and did and thought, but I think that's the reality of it, is that they turn you into somebody that you don't even know who you are anymore, and you don't even like who they've turned you into, because you almost have to become like them, as manipulative and sneaky and deceitful, just to get yourself out of it and just to survive every day,
Right.
you know. And
And you lose
unfortunately,
yourself. You lose
they
yourself.
do. They do. And you know, I'm working on the prequel now, which discusses how I grew up. And I know that's something you and I also very much have in common, and we were just discussing. And I think that's another important aspect of it, because I've talked to a lot of people that have been in relationships with narcissists, and there tends to have been some trauma from childhood. And I want people to understand, this doesn't just mean like we were beat up on and we're sensitive and whining about it now, like poor us, our mama spanked us. You know, even just the emotional neglect, which I hate to say I had the physical abuse, but the emotional neglect was so much worse than
Absolutely,
the
it was.
physical stuff. I mean, everything else healed up. Bruises go away, hand marks go away. You pick yourself up, you're achy for a few days after, you know, wrestling around on the floor and getting thrown downstairs, but you're okay. But the emotional stuff, and that is the number one type of abuse that children suffer, that you can't prove it, you can't criminalize it. There's so much to it. But I think it's interesting, if you don't mind me saying this, you know, I know my publisher, when my book came out, she asked me if my estranged mother had reached out or if she knew about the book. And I said, well, I've heard from people that it's on her coffee table. So I don't know who told her about it, but apparently she's read it, because she sent my baby blanket through my son back to me. So apparently she's done with me. Washed her hands, which you know, we've been no contact for a long time, but that still hurt, because you know
Absolutely.
the publisher's response was, but if she read the book, and I mean, she couldn't have known all that stuff that went on. I said, well, I tried to go to her, even though we didn't have a good relationship. I did go to her. I remember when I called my mother one of the many times that my ex was unfaithful. And my mother just said, well, you married him, you made a commitment. And I just thought, wow. I mean, I am hysterical, sobbing. My heart is like bleeding out after everything I've taken from this man. And you know, to find, and this was on a Mother's Day, by the way. And you know, but it just was a lot. And that was my mother's very cold, very factual, unemotional response. But you know, here with everything you've been through with your daughter, and I had been wondering, I'm like, there's no way. I know your parents, you know, you don't have a relationship, but I thought they had to, with Faith on her deathbed, please tell me that they were there, that they reached out, that they offered some support.
No.
And you said no.
No. No, they did not. I know for a fact that they knew. I didn't hear text, smoke signal, email, phone call, nothing. My husband, Michael, actually physically saw my biological dad on more than one occasion because he had to go out back to work. And I remained by Faith's side the entire time. I never went home. And so he actually ran into him a couple of times, and not once, ever. Did he say, Michael, how is Faith? How is our granddaughter? How is, you know, there was nothing said, not a word. And that was really hard. My husband said, I don't know why you let this bother you. You haven't spoken to them in years. And I said, yeah, I get it, but that's a kid. That's a kid. in that bed, who's been through hell in a handbasket. And if you are so cold and callous that you don't even care that this kid is being told she's not going to make it through the night, she's on multi-organ failure life support, that, I'm being tested for kidney donation, and you can't even say, and it's Christmas. Forget everything. It's Christmas. And you can't even so much as even ask how she's doing. I mean, that just reconfirms that I'm either the fireman and milkman's baby and I got switched in bassinet at the hospital or something, because I still pray for them every single night. I still pray for the man that beat me to death's door every single night, because revenge is not mine to give. And I've had so many people, Dana, that will say to me, well, they're abusive because they were abused and they were abused and they're abused. I'm like, okay, let's just take that for a moment. Let's just take that for
Thank
one
you.
minute and just look at it this way. Let's go
Yes.
up the chain of the ladder. There's always that top step on that ladder. Somebody was the very first and they weren't abused. They chose to act inappropriately and unaccordingly to whomever it was. You,
Yes.
what are you going to say? God was abused? Are you going to say, or whoever you pray to was abused? I mean, all the way up the chain, you can't say, well, my dad was abused, my grandfather was abused, my great grandfather was abused, da, 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 da. I was abused, you were abused, and guess what? We broke the cycle and we're not doing it. So there's a lot to be
Exactly.
said for that.
Yes. And I appreciate you saying that because oftentimes, as I'm sure you have, heard too, when you've been interviewed, people ask about, if they find out about the former marriage, there was abuse. Were you abused as a child? Were your parents abused? Then they say, oh, as if that just makes it okay or explains it, which, okay, explains it. But I agree. I say, no. That's where I have a problem. I don't care if they, and both of my parents were abused. My stepfather was in the foster system. He was abandoned as a baby, actually, by both parents in the foster system. He was abused. My mother had an alcoholic father who put a gun to her head. I had to hear that how many times in my childhood, because apparently I was supposed to be grateful that I was only being beaten and verbally abused and not having a gun put to my head. But here's the thing, is exactly what you said. It is a choice. Because when I did not want to have kids because I was afraid
Yes.
that the cycle was going to continue. They always say, oh, you're going to turn into your parents when you have kids. And I thought, there is no way in hell I am going to let another human being walk this earth that has to suffer with what's in my head. Never, ever, ever. But then when it came to the point, you grow up and you get married and you start feeling biological stuff, then I'm like, oh, crap. But I made a very conscious decision that this child, if I have a child, I'm going to make sure I love this baby more than anything in the entire world, to the point where this child will be annoyed with me. And I am that mom. And I love that I'm that mom. I'm that mom that was on the junior high dance floor with him, twerking and looking stupid and embarrassing the
Love
hell out of him. And I don't care. I want him, I've always done, kind of outrageous things or said those things, because when I go, I want him to say, okay, she embarrassed me. And oh my gosh, I had to duck my head a lot or cover my ears.
Right.
But gosh, my mom was the coolest. I miss my mom. And I will buy him Easter baskets till the day he dies. I will fill his
Absolutely.
Christmas stocking because I love my son. So it's so hard for me to hear that your parents could not, and here's another aspect of it. Take the biology out of it altogether. How about just as a human being with a freaking heart?
Right.
The world was watching you on social media. You were at your daughter's bedside. I'm getting chills thinking about it because there were so many of us that were watching these things, like hoping, pulling for her, praying, wishing things were different for you guys.
Thank you.
And we're not biologically related. And I
I
haven't
wish we
even known
were.
you. I know, I wish we were. You're definitely a kindred spirit, a sister at heart. But that's my point. Is that, how about just on a decent human being level? I promise you, and this is not to say that I'm so great, and because I'm not the only one. I promise you, there are a lot of us that if we were geographically anywhere near you, even if we couldn't hold your hand and be at the bedside with you, we would have been there. We would have been there. We would have been bringing you food. We would have been sending cards and balloons and whatever we could do, just being present to support you. So it sickens me that somebody whose womb you came out of and who was half your creator could just be so indifferent to the fact that you and your daughter were going through this terrible ordeal, and your husband, of course, too, because he was there with you. I mean, it's very, very clear how much he loves you in faith, and I'm so glad that you have him. But
He
gosh
deserved
darn it.
it. Yeah.
Yes, and kudos to him. But it's sickening to me because your mother is supposed to, your mother above all, when you come out of somebody's womb. And I think that's the thing that like our husbands don't get, and that a lot of people don't get, even if you've had, maybe not the best relationships with your parents, just having that relationship and knowing you could put stuff aside for this, that, when somebody's sick or for the holidays, you and I didn't have that. And a lot of people didn't have that. We could be lying bleeding on the floor, and our parents would probably turn away and let us lay there and die. And
Absolutely. Absolutely.
it's a very hard thing, even when you don't have that relationship. It's hard to think in your mind that you're that worthless
I
to a
have.
person. It's a hard one. It's a hard one to swallow. You
Damn.
can accept it, but you're never okay with it, you
I
know?
have a little surprise really quick that I don't mean to interrupt you, but
No, please. Oh, hello. Hi, Faith. I'm Dana. I'm
I've
so happy to see you.
told you all about her. I told you she would be like the sister I always wanted. Remember the book I've been reading, Gasping for Air? See? She knows who you are. She's been praying so hard for you.
I have been watching you on social media, Faith, and I saw Dermot Mulroney. Is that his name? Dermot
Dermot
Mulroney.
Mulroney, yes.
Oh my gosh, how cool was that? I was so excited when I saw that video that he made for you. That was the coolest.
She wanted you to know you were such a warrior, and she's so proud of you.
I think the everybody that has seen you, Faith, we're all cheering for you. You got a whole lot of mamas out there that just want to give you lots of hugs and kisses because you're so brave. You're such a brave little girl.
I got that from my mom. Oh,
Yes, you did. You sure did.
my stubbornness. Yeah, and your stubbornness. I'll take it. I know. I just wanted you to come in and say hi. Thank you. I love you. Thank you. Oh, okay. Say bye.
Adios.
Adios.
Bye, Faith. Adios. No.
Yes, ma'am.
Men suck.
She said
Men
men's.
suck. Well, not all of them.
Most of them. Okay, most of them.
Most of them. Okay. We'll let her have that one. We'll
Most
let
of
her
them
have
are
that one.
willing to nap. All right. She's heard all about you, and I've told her about you, and so I told her that I was doing this with you, and she just texted me and said, "Can I come in and say hello to her?" And I said, "Yes." And she saw you on the side. She goes, "She's beautiful," and I'm like, "Come here." So she says, "You're beautiful." But absolutely, I get it. So many people say, oh, well, it's not their fault. They shouldn't be held accountable in the criminal system for the abuse because they themselves were abused. But what about us? What about the people who had to endure their wrath? I mean, you
Exactly.
get up in the morning and you put your feet on the floor. You did that consciously. You made that choice. You made that choice. I mean, things are that, like people say, well, they're addicted to drugs, they're addicted to alcohol, whatever the case may be. But they also make a choice not to get it fixed. They make a choice not to try to make themselves better. The ones of us that sit on a couch are not the ones who really need to be on that couch. The people who do this need to be on the couch, and they see nothing wrong with their behavior, so they'll never go get on a couch and get help. They will never ever do that. One of
100%.
the one things that just blows my mind is when my brother, who his boyfriend, like my brother got sick and was dehydrated years ago, and he was just dehydrated. It was the heat in the summer. He went to the emergency room, and my biological mom, I thought, was going to just stroke out because he was getting fluids, and she was flipping out because it was during COVID, so she couldn't go. And her baby boy was in the hospital, and he was dehydrated, and she couldn't be there. Now here, Faith and I are going through, surgery after surgery, and she never wanted to appear. And I mean, I'm not taking away from him being dehydrated, but being dehydrated and, having a shoulder replacement or both your jaws replaced or, fundoplication Nissens and pyloroplasties and hiatal hernia repairs and stuff that Faith has been through, and not so much as anything. When I was amputated, I didn't hear a word from either one of my biological parents, not a single word. Well, I got word that my brother's boyfriend got frostbite on his fingers. And like my biological mom went to console my brother. Like, I have no relationship with my brother, all because of the talk that's been put in his ear, one-sided by them. And she has been trying to console him and help him through this because there is a small possibility that the boyfriend might lose two fingers. And that's still traumatic, and I don't want to take that away from him. I haven't met this guy, but here I am, your own flesh and blood, your own daughter. And to hell with her, I mean, my biological father has stated very clear to me that he put my ex in my path. He put my ex in my path that was abusive, and he knew who he was. He knew what he was capable of. But I mean, I would walk through fire. I would literally, like, Faith was so cute because she started singing the song Mama Shark when, she was in the hospital. There was a period where she asked me to do a recording, and it's probably one of the hardest things I've ever seen. You hear me, I am absolutely out of like sync. She is mouthing on a ventilator, "I love you, I love daddy, I want you to know in case I die." And I have the video, and I was like, "No, I love you." And I'm talking to her, I'm like, "Y I live for you, you are not dying on me." Like, and I'm talking to her and talking to her, and it's like, how could anybody not want to be here? This kid's dedicated her life to helping others. She wants nothing. Nothing but to see people smile. Nothing. She has the biggest heart of anyone you've ever met, and you don't even want to come in and see her when you think she might not be here tomorrow. I mean, I cannot wrap my head around that. I can't put myself in that realm of thinking. I can't grasp how somebody could be like that. I don't understand it, no matter how hard I try. And since I've seen you, I haven't told you, I am starting next week. I'm really excited. I am being certified from the county and to the state to be a guardian ad litem to help other kids in these situations.
That's amazing.
So I'm going to
Cool.
start doing that as well. But it's just, for none of these kids that, I mean, when we were in the ICU, Dana, there was no, like, the majority of the time these kids were by themselves. There were no parents in the room. It was like a babysitting service. There was a child down the hall, sweetest little thing, who died alone. And it broke my heart because like, I couldn't go in there because of HIPAA. I get it. But I mean, this kid, it died by themselves all alone. And it's, how can you do that? How can you be a parent? There is no job that's going to keep me sitting in a chair knowing my child's in a room dying. It is just not going to happen. They could take that chair and shove it because I'll get another job. That's our kid. How do people have that mentality on an outlook? I don't get it.
I don't either, but it's that actually spurred a memory that I just, how you have these things just randomly come up. When I was maybe 3 or 4 years old, I had to have a major dental surgery. My mouth was really my whole jaw and everything. But anyway, I was in the Children's Memorial Hospital, and the strange thing was, and this goes along with what you're saying, but this, shows the narcissist view of things. I mean, I'm little, so when they're doing surgery, they have you strapped to the bed because they can't risk you kicking and all that. And it was a scary thing. I wanted my mommy,
Of
even though my
course.
mommy was never there. I
Right.
wanted my mommy. And my mother did come to the hospital every day. I'll give her that. But what bothered me was, she spent so much time with another child that I think was sharing a room with me or in the room next door. I was very young, obviously, so I remember very little, but it was a nearby child. That child ended up dying, while I was in the hospital as well. And I remember my mother saying, because I was asking for my mother, and the nurse said, well, she's with this other child, the child's parents haven't been here to visit her, so your mother's with her. So I am grateful, don't get me wrong. I am glad that my mother was with this little girl when she passed, because her mother and father weren't, hadn't been there to see her. And I don't even know what she passed with. I was too little to remember that detail.
Sure.
But I needed my mom, you know?
Absolutely.
And the thing was, is that in a normal situation, I should be lucky that I'm still here. I'm still alive. That child never got to live a life. And so I had all these years to have my mother, but my mother never gave herself to me in that way. But in public, when a lot of people were watching, and when it looked really noble and really good, she was able to do something that looked, because that's essentially what you will be doing, except we know that you have this beautiful heart that you want to share with these young people. Whereas I look at my mother did it, and it was so everybody would think she has this kind heart. And that's like pure narcissism.
Absolutely.
Pure narcissism right there. Deny your own kid, but I'm going to go be with this other one. But again, I've had to learn to look at the positive in things. Did it suck for me? Yes, but my mother's my mother. She doesn't want to be my mother. I get that. But thank God, even if it was fake, thank God that one little girl didn't die alone because of my mother. So I'll credit her for that,
Right.
even though she wanted the credit to be public. But yeah. I commend you for doing what you're doing, especially with everything you already have on your plate.
Oh,
You have
thank
you're
you.
trying to do so much for so many people. And
Thank
I think the rest of the world is like, what can we do for you? Like, what could so, definitely remember to reach out whenever anybody, and this goes to anybody who's listening too. I think so many of us that have come from situations where we've been the underdog and we've been the victim, that we don't want to see anyone else suffer in any way, shape, or form. And so we kind of overdo and
We do.
overcompensate because we're trying so hard to make sure nobody else ever feels any bit of what we felt. But we have to remember to stop for a minute and let other people do for us sometimes too, and take a minute for ourselves. But kind of going back to when your daughter walked in, thank you. She kind of had perfect timing with what we were talking about.
Right, she did.
Thank you for being a cycle breaker, and thank you for showing us. I mean, it made my heart melt to see you having that moment with your daughter. I wish that that was the kind of relationship my mother and I had. And I know you wish you would have had that with your mother, but the fact that you could take what you didn't have and give all of that and more to your daughter, and to see her giving that love back to you, is just the most beautiful thing ever. So thank you
Thank you.
for
Oh my
showing us
God,
that.
yes, it made me
It's
cry.
gorgeous.
It really
Well,
made
we do need to cry
me
because
cry.
there are so many kids out there who are us, but 30 years ago, and still in those situations when there are people that would be loving them like you and your daughter love each other. And unfortunately, for some reason, our mothers decided not to give us up for adoption or abort us or all the other horrible things they, tell us while we're here that they should have done. But
Right.
it's very sad to know that there's a lot of couples out there that do have that love to give. But the fact that you are a cycle breaker, I hope that I am too. I
As
tried
are
to
you.
be.
Yes, you are. Absolutely.
And we'll find out when my son has children, if he has children, how that continues, because he's going to be 21 in a few months. He's a little older, and he has a lady now that he's moved into his house that he bought. So I know, and I love her to death. And you know what? It's funny that we're talking about this parent stuff, because that's the thing. She came into our lives last year. And I thought it was strange that she was willing to move, half across the country and away from everything and anyone. And finding out little by little that her mother has nothing to do with her. Her dad's too busy, running around with this gal over here. And it just makes me sad. And so I think that this has been my opportunity, to. I always joke with her, she's my child that doesn't give me grief, and I don't have stretch marks from her either. But So happy to be her mama bear and to be her mama replacement or whatever it is. And she has taken to me as well. And I just adore her. I've even told my son, I don't care what happens with you all, that this
I
is
do
my
that.
little girl right here. She is not going anywhere out of my life if you decide to whatever, but I am not going to abandon her like I have been abandoned. That will never happen. She's got me for life. And so I love that you're able to do that, you know, with the kids in the hospital. And I'm trying to do that with my son's daughter because we didn't have the mothers that we should have had. So all we can do is be the mothers that we wish we had had and receive the love that way.
You're right. And it took me so long, Dana, to realize that, I have so much gratitude for my parents, even though they say differently, because they taught me how not to be a parent. They taught me how not to be there for them. And how they, like, my dad would use me as an scapegoat to go see his other women. And then say, if you tell her, I'll put it back on you and make her believe you made me. And he would do the same thing to Faith. And I'm like, I will not allow my daughter to lie. But they did give me refugee. They did let me move in with them when Faith was born, because after I got out and escaped, because we didn't have anywhere else to go, and they had their house, because it'll never be a home, is like Fort Knox, and it had the alarms and the cameras, and it's huge, and it's like almost 10,000 square feet. So we never saw them. We had our own section in the house. But believe me, they got compensated for us being there, believe me. But anytime Faith ever saw them and they said anything, I immediately shielded her and had her leave the area. But they were always traveling and doing, their thing or whatever. And I owe them a lot of gratitude for what they've done. But their words stay with you forever. Like, Faith will come in here right now, and she told people at the hospital, she was like, my mom has never hit me, spanked me, popped me. And to this day, I can say that my mother has never yelled at me or said anything hurtful. She'll say, Faith, I love you with all my heart and soul. I don't like the words you just used to me. I don't use them to you, so please don't use them to me. And she's right. I don't. And like, if she does something wrong, like if she didn't finish her book report, I would say, you know what? I love you. You chose not to do your book report, so you're choosing not to have your phone for the weekend. That's your choice. I'm not taking it from you. You made this choice. And she has so much respect coming and going now. And, but then again, like, we had the best situation. We had the worst surgeon, and he comes in and he was like, let me see your stomach. And she's like, uh-uh. She was petrified of him. And he goes, I made your stomach. And I started to see that little spark of faith back when she was like, no, you didn't. My mom made my stomach. And he just looked at her, and he has an accent, and he says, we're going to be friends. And she goes, don't count on it. And so he goes, well, I got things to do, so you need to hurry up and just let me see your stomach. Mom, do you have any questions? And I said, before I ask you anything, Faith needs to be heard. She has a voice, it matters, and you need to hear it. You need to hear whatever she has to say before we even have a discussion. And he was like, well, I'm going out with my son, so we need to make it fast. And I'm like, no, then you shouldn't have come in here right now. Because
Right.
if she has questions, you're gonna answer them before I even speak. And Faith looks at me and goes, Mom, somebody get him a kid. And it was just the funniest moment. And it was just like, he just wrote her off like, okay, I use your canvas to do what I want to do, but it doesn't have a voice box, which is absolutely not true. I remember one of the hardest things I was ever told growing up. I was 9, and I was told, I wish that I had miscarried you. And I was like, what? And I was 9. I didn't even know what that meant. I had no idea what that meant. And I was an ATM for her, like my grandparents, and still to this day, I couldn't understand it, because I asked my grandparents, who taught me how to love unconditionally, how to be a mom, a friend, a spouse, a partner, everything in between. I asked my grandmother, I said, how is it you raised your son, my dad? And I was like, because he's so different than you. And she looked at me with the straightest face, and Dana, I had to be like 15, 16. And she goes, I could ask you the same question because they're your parents. And I was like, I don't get it. And I don't understand. And she was like, money and power changed him. The desire for the outside world to see someone that is not the man I raised is what he strives for. And the gold digger he's married to, my grandparents totally disliked her. And I knew it, but she didn't want to admit to it. And they taught me everything. Like every apartment I've ever had, my home, everywhere, there's pictures of my grandparents, every single where that you ever been. And when we were in the hospital, there's a picture of my grandparents over Faith's head, even in the NICU, as they're her guardian angels. But it's like they taught me how to follow the good footprints, but my parents taught me how to follow the bad footprints. And I chose never to take that path. I wanted to go this way because this is the more beautiful journey. And to look at my daughter and know that she's going to fight because she has a reason to fight, it's a proven fact that if you are in there and you show love, like I was reading to her and talking to her and singing to her, they're going to fight 10 times harder to survive than those that are in that room by themselves and they have no one. And that's heartbreaking. We don't ask to be born. We are put here, and I know this is harsh and I'll make it an unstoppable because that way nobody gets offended. But I mean, one of the meanest things, one, and I hold my own and I admit my faults. I'm not perfect. I said to my dad, I said, I can't help you who you went into their vagina, but I can't pick who I came out of either. I mean, you chose who you went to. I had no choice who I came out of. And that angered him, but I mean, it's true. You just, a dad is supposed to be the daughter's first love. How that person's supposed to show me how to love and give unconditional love and be there to wrap his arms around and say, I'm proud of you and you've done such a great job and this is the kind of guy you want to date. And I didn't get any of that. None of that. And my mom compared me to my brother on absolutely everything. He wrote a thesis. I know that's not impossible. My brother is incredibly intelligent. He has a master's degree. But he has no self-worth because of how he was raised with these blinders on. And because of that, he's worked at the same restaurant for almost 20 years, close to 20 years, and he has a master's. And it's because he's afraid of confrontation. He's afraid of, being in charge. And that's not his fault. He was not taught how. And that's not his fault. But I've written books that are published. And well, it's harder to write a thesis. It's harder to wait tables than to be a doctor or go to, law school or whatever it is. It's harder than whatever you did or accomplished. And it's like, we've never done good enough. We would never be good enough. I mean, do I know if they listen? I don't know. I doubt it. I don't know. I know they've never read my book. They wouldn't spend the time. I've never seen my biological mom read a book, to be honest with you. I've never seen her read. It's dumbfounding to me because if my grandparents were still here today, they would have been like, glue your tail to the chair. We've got faith. Like, you can stay in the room, but we're here and we're going nowhere. And they would have been every single step of the way right there with her by her side. And if they couldn't have come in the room because they were so adamant that not more than two people could be in the room at the time, they would have sat right outside in that waiting area and not moved. Just so they know, I know that they're there and Faith knows they're there. And then not even a phone call, a text message, an email, nothing. Not even to this day.
See, that's what's baffling to me. But, like I said, we have similar situations, too similar. So I understand, all we can do is, and this is the one thing that helped me in my healing was understanding. I mean, we all know we can't control other people, but I stopped internalizing what I felt or what people were trying to make me feel by whatever they were doing or not doing, as the case may be, because there is a sense of they want to make sure that you feel invalidated and undeserving of their attention and their time and all this stuff. And I have definitely felt the same from my, mother and stepfather, but I don't want it doesn't mean anything to me anymore. I wish it were different because I mean, I came out of this woman, so I cannot comprehend how there's nothing there, but she hadn't wanted me to begin with. So, it's hard. It kind of goes back to the same thing where there's a choice, like, okay, well, if you didn't want me, but you still had me, why did you keep me then? Like, why didn't you just
Absolutely.
let me go with somebody else who actually did want a child? But, Aside from that, it's just about making choices for ourselves. And I choose not to walk around anymore with other people's unhealed trauma and the shame that other people want me to feel for crap that I had nothing to do with, because I felt bad that had to have that crude conversation, but I had a very similar one with my brother, who is also the golden child and also very highly educated, but he has been told, well, everybody's been told all kinds of lies about me and with regard to my mother and that relationship. And, I had to say to him one time, it was actually on a Thanksgiving. I remember being across the kitchen island. We're filling our plates with our Thanksgiving meal. And he said something, well, how do you want her to feel about, your real dad and the fact that you have a relationship? And I said, well, I don't know, because I'm not the one who spread my legs open to make me with him. She
Absolutely.
does.
Right.
So I'm here. Guess what?
Right.
If you didn't want to make a baby with them, I mean, you know how babies are made. Sorry, I'm here, but I'm not, and I'm glad. I'm sorry it took me 40 some years, but I'm glad that I am now taking up the space that I should have taken up before, because before they wanted to keep me in this little box and,
Yes.
don't say this and don't tell anyone that, and we're going to pretend this and pretend that and not tell anybody. And now I'm just like, no, you know what? I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to be ashamed that I'm half Puerto Rican and that, our Hispanic heritage. I'm not going to be ashamed that you were a teenager when I was born. Shit happens. Oh, excuse
No,
me.
you're
But
fine. You're
crap
fine.
happens. Crap happens. But, I'm not going to be ashamed for any of it. I'm not going to be ashamed that, my biological father didn't want to marry her and make a little family with her, like would have been her wish. Although she hates him so much, I don't know why she wished that. I don't have any idea. But like, life goes on. We live in a time where families are blended. They're different. There are single parents. There's same-sex parents. But who cares? I'm me, and I'm not invalid or any more unworthy or undeserving than you or any other human being. We all deserve love. And I will say this to anybody who's in any of our situations with our parents, who has parents like us. Believe me, I feel your angst. Even a couple years ago, even maybe, I think the last time was maybe 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half ago. Oh my gosh, I can't tell you how many times I would be in fetal position, crying in a dark room or in the corner of the shower, just sobbing. Because the heartache of knowing your mother doesn't love you, the rejection. I mean, my God, I've said this before, but like even serial killers and people who do the most heinous things
Yes.
have their mothers sitting behind them in court, knowing what their children did, but loving their children
Right.
anyway
What
and
did we
being
do
there to
wrong?
support them.
Right.
So, gosh darn it. Like for me personally, I was like the straight arrow kid. I was on a roll, two orchestras, first chair, composing my own piano music after I taught my, like, I can go on with like, and like brag about all these things, but like never smoke, never drink. Never. I tried to go
Neither.
to a party once, but I took a cab home because I didn't like the way the kids were acting. But like, I couldn't be any better if I tried. But she couldn't love me. But
Right.
my brother, my mother and stepfather's child together, well, all he had to do before he was even born, I knew he was the greatest thing that ever spawned from anybody's loins. So, he can do no wrong, and he has lived he has done everything basically. He has been a perfect puppet doing and saying everything that they wanted him to do and getting his doctorate and getting the job that they wanted him to get, not the one that he wanted to take, and making the amount of money that they expected him to make and living where they expected, and good for him. And I honestly love my brother. I hope he's happy. Unfortunately, he has bought into their lies and all the things they said about me, and one of the funniest ones, I think, is, and you know this from reading Gasping for Air twice, But there was that bipolar diagnosis. Okay. I was said to be bipolar. Well, you don't find out until the sequel that I'm still trying to write over here. Since I have been out of my former marriage, the doctor retracted that diagnosis because he didn't realize everything that I had gone through.
Right.
So now, even as recent as a couple of months ago, my mother was telling family members and other people who I still have some communication with because I have very little family left, thanks to her and her husband's lies. They're still telling people that I am so mentally ill and because I'm bipolar, and it's like this hush hush, this stigma thing. My thing is this. Number one, you haven't spoken to me in years. So I'm glad you're running around telling people this, but that's like old stuff. And I haven't been on medications for a few years now for bipolar medication that I was taking. Thank you to my ex, by the way, who is the one, if you read the book, that had me so concerned that I really was bipolar that he sent me to the doctor, and I must have answered all the questions correctly to come home with two mood stabilizers that I'm pretty sure were the reason that I was so numb to everything he was doing to me for the next 17 years that I took them. But I am no longer on them, and guess what? I don't think I'm any crazy. I mean, I'm a little spicy and fiery sometimes,
Which
but
I
than the next. I mean, after everything I've been through, I'm pretty sure that I could do some crazy stuff and people would be like, well, after what she's been through, I
She
can
gets a pass,
justify that.
right?
But to make somebody feel less than in any way, whether it's like our parents ignoring us, going around and trying to stigmatize them with a mental health, because I don't know what it is with narcissists. Really, they have to come up with something else, because the crazy thing, I'm just so tired of. It's such a vague, as you've said before, they should be the ones sitting there. They're the ones that have
Right?
no remorse and no empathy and no heart, yet we're the ones who suffer. But I want people to know that too. I think that's a big takeaway from all of this. No matter if that narcissist in your life is your parent, your husband, it hates to say, sometimes it's your child, your friend, your coworker, whatever. Just remember, it doesn't matter. Even if I'm sitting here saying, yes, I'm bipolar, I wouldn't carry shame about that. Because guess what? I'm still who I am, and I know my heart, and I know my mind, and I'm a good person. And we all have something, right? We all have stuff that we deal with, and stuff that we carry, and stuff that's affected us, but that doesn't define who I am. And it doesn't define you, any more than like your physical appearance or anything. Even I have this thing I've always told my son. Good people do bad things and bad people do good things.
Right.
So what's the intention? So there's a lot here, but I don't ever want anyone to feel like the things that you and I have felt. And I know I've had even recently somebody reached out because they actually had committed themselves because they were worried they were going to take their life. And I mean, I can speak for me. I've been there, not to where I was going to take my life, but I've actually wished that I had the ability to take my life too many times because I just didn't want to do this anymore. I didn't want to deal with the pain. I didn't want to hurt anymore. I didn't want to suffer. So if that's you, and if you're listening to this, just remember this. Number one, the people who are biologically related to you, yeah, they're supposed to love you. They should have some sense of obligation to support you and be there for you. They're not always going to be. But like me, like you, we're okay
Yeah,
because
and
there
you're
are
not
people in
alone.
this world.
So not
You're
alone.
not alone because there's so many people. I think when I stopped focusing on the people who didn't love me, even though they were supposed to, once I kind of got them out of the way, it's kind of like pulling weeds in your garden. You started to see, like, oh, what's that over there? There's something blooming over here, too. And there's something sprout. There were all these people, and they'd been there all along. And then new ones came in because I made room for them. But I
Right.
had blinders on. I was like, no, they're supposed to love me. They're supposed to be the ones.
Right.
Forget them. The thing is that no matter who you are, I don't care your circumstances whatever your situation is, you deserve love. You
Absolutely.
deserve love.
Absolutely. 1,000%. 1,000%. And it doesn't make it any easier. I think it hurts us more because we have such a giving, big heart. Because, like, I'm sitting there watching her, and Michael was with me 24/7 the first 2 weeks. And then he had to go back to work because he didn't get sick time. So I was there by myself, and he would leave and come back. Like, he'd be gone 3 days and come back for one night, and then he'd go back. And he's like, "Have you walked out of this room since I left?" "No, I haven't even walked down the hall. Like, I've gone, no, I'm right here and I've gone nowhere." And I sat there and I honestly thought, you know, when he was there, he was so my rock. He was at home. He was my rock. He was my rock. But it was like, why? Why don't I have a parental unit that's like sitting there with me going through this, you know? And then how are they not just destroyed? I couldn't put my head on a pillow at night knowing that my child or my grandchild, whatever the case may be, is in a hospital dying, and I don't give two rats behinds about it. Like, and I think it hurts us even more because growing up, you and I wondered, I know I did, why do y'all love my brother so much, but
Thank
not
you.
me? What did I do that he didn't? And I mean, like, my dad has no decent relationship with my brother, and he never even wanted to accept the fact that my brother is gay. And it's like, okay, well, as long as they treat you well, I don't care. As long as they don't put their hands on you in an unwarranted manner, I don't care. But Victoria was the one that was like, "Well, you must put your name on a bus stop, and you stayed, so you deserve to get beaten every single day while pregnant. You're the one who did this or this." When I wasn't even there, say I was at my grandparents, and my brother did something, I'd come home from the weekend, and it was like, "You're grounded because this happened." I wasn't even there, and it's like, why am I not worth loving? I mean, what is wrong with me that makes me not okay to you? I mean, like, I could never figure that out. To this day, I can't figure that out
No,
because.
it's just unhealed trauma. They obviously have issues that they are not strong enough to take accountability for.
But they
So
don't think they've ever
instead,
done anything wrong. Not
I
one
know,
bit.
and that's the lovely thing about narcissists. If we could all think that highly of ourselves, that we are incapable of doing anything to ever harm somebody. Believe me, I've had that conversation with my mother when she was questioning my faith. In God, I remember this conversation, and this was actually a year before we went no contact, forever. And she was asking me about, like, do you go to confession? I said, well, I'm supposed to go a lot more than I do, but yeah, you try to go and do that. And she's like, well, what do you confess? I said, well, there's the Ten Commandments, and I'm explaining, and then there's the 10 things under each one. We have this little pamphlet at our church of 100 questions you can ask yourself, because God knows somebody will find a sin in something. But it's
Nobody's
just about
perfect.
taking accountability for, like, yes, even if it wasn't intentional, yes, I may have thought or said or done something that probably wasn't the best version of myself or the best person I could be. And she literally said, I'll never forget it for the rest of my life. She said, well, I have nothing to confess. And I'm sitting there, like, literally, like, making a list in my head. I'm already at, like, number 100. Give you, like, let's just start with, like, the lying part, because that's usually when we're little, when we're 6 and 7 and 8
Right.
going into confession, we start with, like, I lied to my mom and dad. Well, let me, like, start there, lady. Like, but she, and I challenged her on it. I said, you've never done or said anything snarky or not. Oh no, I don't talk about anybody. I'm like, we just had a conversation about a cousin that you were saying is fake and said, like, really, lady? Like, so I just have no, you have to look at people for what they're worth. And, I'm not telling anybody to disown their families, but I think that we have to be, when we're grown up, especially, and able to make these decisions, look at people for what they're worth. Now, my husband feels that even though there has been stuff in his family, he can go to his family stuff and just be polite and be courteous and just avoid those topics of conversation. And, there's one person in particular, just kind of avoid them, say hello if he has to, and he's fine with that and he could have a good time. Me, I'm kind of like, if I know where we stand with each other, like, I don't need to submit myself to your toxicity and your crap. So not so interested. Like
Right.
I don't do fake, you know. I know my husband would, he respects my position and understands it, but I think he wishes that I was more like other people are, where they just go and pretend to be not, and it's just not who I am. But I mean, everybody's got to figure out what works for them. It's just not worth my time when I know now that I see clearly that I know I would rather spend my time and energy because I have so little that's just, you know, to socialize or to be with family. I want it to be with the people who matter to me and who I
Absolutely.
matter to. And
Absolutely.
I don't think it's a bad thing to say, like, am I sad? Yeah, it kills me that I don't have a relationship with my mother. But like you, my grandma, and she's gonna be 84 on Saturday. I call
Oh,
her my
happy
hot
grandma.
mamacita. I know, happy birthday, grandma. But she loves me so much, and I feel her love. And it's like a mother should love a daughter. And she hates that there's this divide between her daughter and me, but she doesn't love me any less, and she doesn't place blame. And you know what? She loves my mother. She doesn't like a lot of the stuff she's seeing, unfortunately, for the first time in all her life, you know, now that she lives with my mother. But you know, I'm glad that I still have that.
Yeah.
And we all just have to look at what we have. I think the grass is always greener, isn't it? You know, we always wish. I mean, I looked at this beautiful, you know, you and Faith giving Eskimo kisses, and it's just so. I know you're laughing, but you know what I would have given? You know what I would give now? I'm 48 years old, and that little girl in me still.
Longs
I wish
for it.
my
I do
mom would have.
too.
You can Eskimo kiss me someday. Like, I'll
I
take
will.
it.
I will. I will.
But seriously, but I love that there is love that we still have to give. It's just not going to be from the people that we expect it from. But somebody told me a long time ago that if you take expectation out of the game, then you won't be disappointed.
Absolutely,
So it
absolutely.
just makes you that much more grateful. You know, I mean, do you wish that you and your daughter hadn't endured the last few months and a lot of what you, of course, but your daughter's here. And that little girl is going to be here a long time because she's a fighter. And like she said, she got it from her mama. And
She
that's
is
a
in.
beautiful thing.
Well, when she came out of one of her surgeries, I was like, "All right, kiddo," and I said, "We are going to walk this journey." And I've said this to her almost every day of her life, and she's so out of it. And she looks at me and she's like, "Hand in hand." I said, "As," and she goes, "Mother and daughter." And I said, "And when you can't walk," she goes, "Mommy's going to carry me." And I said, "That's right." I said, "Because you are my," and she said, "heart and soul." And it, I've said this to her like repeatedly every day. And I've even told her I have it tattooed on my arm. Well, what's left of it. So when she's having, you know, procedures done, she's holding my arm, she can read it. And it, those are the words that I've said to her from day one. And I actually have her footprint from the NICU tattooed on my foot. And I tell her all the time, I'm like, "You see this? When you can't walk, I'm carrying you. It's right here." And
Love that.
she is just so inspirational. And I'm like, "You are my strength." I said, "You are who I aspire to be when I grow up." And she's like, "Mom." And then, like, I'm laying there. My husband took pictures. I'm in the bed and, you know, I'm all contorted because you don't want to pull a line. And she's got this and she's got that. And he took a picture of her and she's on life support. She's on the bed and she has her hands on my face like this. And she always does this. And I've always done it to her where her hands are on my face or I put my hands on her face. And it was just, I told her, I said, "You are the love of my life. You, my greatest honor in this world is being your mom." And she even said, "I don't understand why those people didn't love you." And I was like, "You know, you could either fill that cup of heart that you have full of love and inspiration and joy and courage, or you could fill it with negativity and drama and toxicity. And it's up to you because you only have one ability. And is it in here for that or this?" And she was like, "You're right." And I said, "You know, if they called me right now, I would be there. But I know, like, when they were talking about kidney, you know, having to do a kidney transplant, I mean, before he even finished a sentence, I was like, if you need to go take my liver, just scoop me out, but you better find a way." And I'm telling Michael, I'm like, "You stay at this hospital, you don't leave, you don't move, you don't nothing. When they get me done, you wheel me back here. I'll recover here. I don't care." But I, part of me was like, what if I'm not a match? They're not gonna, they won't even call and see how she's doing. They're not gonna offer to be tested for her, you know? And luckily, by the grace of God, this kid's numbers turned around. And yes, she has a kidney disease now, but It could have been a whole lot worse. We no longer, by the grace of God, have to have a transplant. But it was just every day we would pray and pray and just, the chaplain was in there all the time. I'm like, you come in here and pray for strength and guidance. You do not pray for comfort because she can't stop fighting. Like she can be
Right.
comfortable when we're recovering, when we've healed. And until then, you can't. Hey, babe, you can't not fight. You have to fight. This is not an option. And when I look at her, and I had never seen her. I mean, she coded in the NICU. She had seizures in the NICU. We had a tracheostomy placed in the NICU. I was more scared this time because a tracheostomy gave me a guaranteed airway. And there was a period where, Dana, they came in and they were like, we need to teach you how to do the Braviac line. And it has to be sterile and it has to do this. And I'm like, okay. I was so angry at myself because I couldn't put gloves on my hands. And I was like, I'm going to figure out how to do this. And Michael's like, it's okay. I'll help you. I'll help you. I'm like, no, you don't understand. I've changed all the trachs. I changed all the tubes. I've done this. I've done that. I will figure out how to do this. And I got so mad. I was like, I feel like I'm failing her because I don't have two hands. How am I going to do this? I have to keep it sterile. I have to do this. I have to do this. So I said to them, I need a minute. And I walked out and I was like, give me an extra large glove. I wear a small. I was like, give me an extra large glove. I got it on. I was like, okay, it's on. Now let's go. And they were like, how are you going to open the saline? It's wrapped in plastic. And I jammed it down on my leg from the other side and it popped out. And I'm like, it's out. And they're like, I'm like, there's a way to do it. You just have to find another way. Like, I can tie my own shoes one-handed. I'm like, it just takes some time, creativity, and patience, and you'll get it. But you're pregnant for so long, months and months and months and months, but then they grow inside of you. And then to give a child and just be like, to hell with you, I will never be able to wrap my head around how somebody could feel that way and be so empty inside and cold and callous. How they even get up in the morning and look at themselves and like who they see. They can't. There's no way, but they are heartless and they're emotionless. They cannot feel a thing.
That's funny you say that because in writing my book about growing up, that's one thing that keeps coming up. And it's funny when you write stuff and you start seeing patterns, because even though the stuff has been in your head, when you have it on paper, you can actually
So different.
visually notice a pattern. And that word emotionless, that's my mother. She always just had this stone face, flat lips, just dead in her eyes. And I look back on everything, and hopefully the book will be out by the end of this year so everybody could read it so you'll understand where I'm coming from. But I think that's why she didn't, she just tried to inhibit everything I showed potential in, every success I had. Achievements were diminished or just dismissed altogether. I could not, I mean, I was working on one scene today where I'm like, my school nominated me to be in a pageant in high school. And she was like, I don't know why you're doing this. You're not going to win. And I was like, I'm not that person. I don't think I'm the prettiest. I didn't necessarily expect to win, but God, even if I was the ugliest thing ever, it would be nice if my mother just thought I could maybe, or just
Encourage you.
helped me. Yeah. And it was, and I remember, I mean, at that age, when you're a teenager, you get a little bolder, at least I did. And I was just like, what is it about? Like, please tell me, because my whole life, as you and I have been discussing here, it's been that, why can't you love me? You love him, my brother. You love all these other people. But what the hell is it about me? Why can't you love me? And I said, can you at least just give me a compliment? And she said, no. She said, I'm not going to give you a compliment because you'll let it go to your head. And she says, I never want you to think that you're worth more than what you are. And I was like, oh,
That's so
more
excruciating.
than what I am, because according to her,
It's nothing.
I was nothing. Ding, ding, ding.
And you're so
And I mean,
beautiful, and it's so
well,
opposite.
that's very sweet, but I mean, I don't care if I was an ugly duckling and the runt of the litter. My God,
You don't say
that's my
that.
mother. That's my mother.
Right?
And so I think for me, it was eye-opening even back then that it's like, okay, I don't know if it was jealousy. I don't know if it was because maybe I don't know. She wished that she had led her life differently.
That's
There's a
not your
lot there.
fault.
You'll appreciate this book. There's a lot there, and I don't want to give too much away, but I think it's eye-opening when you come to the realization that whoever this person is, this narcissist, that, it's not about you, because it
Right.
was never about you, and
Right.
it was never about me. It was always about them, even with my ex-husband, and I'm guessing with your ex too. It wasn't about me, really. It was about them.
It's their loss. It's their loss. Like, and I know you have another engagement, but I one day Faith did say to my mom, my mom's having major surgery. And she goes, yeah, I know. And she goes, do you even love my mom? And she goes, no, I don't even love your mom. I don't even like your mom. And she goes, why do you say that? She's having surgery tomorrow. What if she died on the table? And she goes, well, then I'd finally get my wish to come true. I would be
Oh
okay.
my gosh.
And this was to
Oh my
Faith, and Faith
gosh.
was like 10. So she did say to her, I hope you die. And she goes, that is my mom, who has never not been there for me. And she did say to her, my mom, my daughter said to her, my mother, I hope you die. And she was like, that is the horrible, worst thing you could say. So what does she do? She forgets the dialogue all the way up to and starts telling everybody how Faith told her she
Yep.
wanted her to die. Like nothing else gets brought in. It's
I'm
this.
laughing because that's my mother completely, but I'm
You have
sorry.
a
I didn't mean to
10-year-old
interrupt. I
who
just
would.
wanted to explain. I'm not some sadistic person sitting
No.
here smiling, laughing, but I'm like,
Right.
that's so my mother. She will leave everything out
Except about
except for that
her.
one thing,
Right.
which goes back to what I said in the beginning. I hated what these narcissists, I hated who they turned me into, because when I turned into them, boy, everybody knew about it, and I was the a-hole, and that's not right. But I stand by anything I've ever said and did. And you know what? I give your daughter credit. I mean, we never want our kids to run around saying stuff like that, but I give her credit for standing up for you
That's
and
what
for
she did.
herself and asserting for herself.
Right.
And she should be proud of herself. And I know you're very proud of your daughter, but
I
thank
am.
God that that is a wise little girl that you have there, let me tell you.
Yeah. No, I told her, I was like, I'm not going to have her apologize to you because
No.
she's sticking up for what's right and her voice deserves to be heard. I mean,
Yes.
who says to a child, let alone a child who has some cognitive and executive function disorder and she's delayed, that I don't care if your mom dies on the table? I don't love her. I don't like her.
What a horrific thing to say about anybody, anyway. I
Right, but to
mean, my
say it to a
Lord.
child who is in severe anxiety because I'm a single mom, what happens if something happens to me? She's like, Mom, I don't want to be with them. Put me up for adoption. Like, I don't want to be with them, and that makes it even harder. I mean, it's the what ifs and all that. But you have to come back. I know you have another engagement coming on, and you've got to come back. I love when we're here and we're together and we talk, and you and I are just like kindred spirits and so much
We are.
alike. And I know you know this, but I just want to say, it's your mom's loss. You are such a beautiful soul and a beautiful person, and you do so much to help other people. And it's my honor to even know you, let alone call you a friend. And it's her loss. It's her loss. And you have done so well for yourself and your life. And your son loves you. And maybe one day your daughter-in-law to be loves you.
Oh,
And
yeah, we all love her too. But thank you. You're very, very kind, but know that the feelings are definitely a two-way street here. I absolutely adore and respect you as well. And yes, we're like friends for life.
you're
And
stuck with me.
yeah, we are two peas in a pod, but I am so privileged to have met you and your daughter, and I'm so happy that you guys have your husband that's there being Papa Bear for both of you, because even though us strong women can fend for ourselves and stand up on our own, it's nice to have somebody that gives us that hug at the end of the day too, and that we can lean on when we need a little break from being so strong all the time. So,
Absolutely.
kudos to the hubby.
Thank
And yes, we will absolutely do this again.
Tell
Absolutely.
everybody where to find your book because everybody needs to read this book. This should be a must read.
You're very sweet. Gasping for Air, Stranglehold of Narcissistic Abuse. It's anywhere where you buy books online. Most people go to Amazon, but you can go to my website as well, danasdiaz.com, and click on the link there. And you can catch me on Facebook and Instagram. I post every day, and we try to do some different things. I try to give informational stuff, resources, but also we have to laugh sometimes too, and kind
Absolutely.
of, We have to joke about it sometimes. Laughing and feeling good is okay sometimes. We don't have to be Wednesday Addams all the time and be dark and gloomy
So
and awful.
true.
So
So true.
there is joy in life. Just look for those little joys and those blessings. And you, Miss Victoria, you and your daughter are two of those beautiful blessings that we all have. And we're thankful that she's with us and that you're with us. And we'll do this again.
Thank you so much. Thank you.